Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 11, 2015. Civil society activists say they are determined to play a role in implementing the signed peace agreement.
We are stakeholders in the strict meaning of the word. We are participants in the implementation of this agreement. We should not sit back and blame later. We need to act.
And Jonglei State agriculture officials say extreme weather conditions have caused too many crops to fail this year.
So generally, the county is facing severe drought. And this is going to be a disaster to our people. So now we have failed to achieve food security to our population.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese civil society activists gathered in Juba today to decide on the most effective way to work with both government and rebel officials on implementing the newly signed peace agreement. As Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba, the first obstacle the activists must overcome is dispute within their own ranks.
More than 30 participants from 17 different organizations took part in today's forum, which was organized by the South Sudan Democratic Engagement Monitoring and Observation Program. Facilitator Merkeji Lorna outlined the objectives for the event.
Start the process of building consensus among civil society and other partners, such as the academia, professional associations, faith-based institutions, and youth, plus women, on how we can work together to implement the signed peace agreement.
A representative of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance signed the compromise peace agreement in Addis Ababa on August 17th. Lorna says it's important for the alliance to continue asserting itself as a partner in the peace process.
We are stakeholders in the strict meaning of the word. We are participants in the implementation of this agreement. So the other reason why we are having this meeting is because we have a role to play. We should not sit back and blame later. We need to act.
Benny Gideon represents the South Sudan Law Society. He says in order to be effective partners, civil society activists must
strategize and develop engagement mechanism, engagement strategy on how they can move ahead with the implementation, monitoring, and evaluation of the agreement. Because remember, civil society are part and parcel of the peace agreement.
Gideon says civil society groups should organize a national conference to nominate representatives that will join different bodies to oversee implementation of the peace agreement.
Remember, civil society are required to be in the Strategic Defense and Security Review Board. They are also required to be in the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. They are also required to be in the Special Reconstruction Fund. They are also required to be in the different bodies that are charged with institutional reform.
Isaac Kongur Kenyi, who works for the Justice and Peace Commission of the Catholic Church in Juba, says civil society's main role in implementing the deal is to hold politicians accountable for ending corruption, providing security, making sure reparations are made for criminal acts, and all other provisions is spelled out in the agreement.
We are looking at the three major partners. The SPLM in government, who signed the agreement. You have the SPLM in opposition, who also signed the agreement. And we have the SPLM leadership. Now, we are trying to see the gaps of implementation. They caused the problem. They caused the devastation. They have signed on this agreement after 20 months. So we want to see the gaps, how they can implement this.
But Kenyi says the monumental task of following through on every provision in the agreement won't happen unless activists themselves work together to see that it does happen.
This war has caused a lot of division among our communities. It has destroyed our social fabric. We have civil society on the side of the SPLM in opposition, and we have civil society in the government control areas. We need to come together. Then we will be able to implement this agreement to the benefit of common men.
Historically, Kenya says, South Sudanese civil society has been blocked from participating in past peace agreements. But this time around, as signatories to the peace agreement, civil society groups are determined to play a role in its implementation. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
In western Bahr al-Ghazal state, military personnel are being trained by a group called Justice and Peace. It is a Roman Catholic organization devoted to conflict resolution, trauma management, and reconciliation. Organizers say the training will reduce the fear associated with war. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story from Wau.
For the past 3 days, about 40 military commanders and privates from the Sudan People's Liberation Army, or SPLA, have been receiving conflict management training provided by the Justice and Peace Commission. With the signing of the peace agreement, most South Sudanese believe the conflict is over, but tens of thousands are still traumatized by what they witnessed during the fighting. SPLA forces in western Bahr al-Ghazal state, like those in other states where fighting was rampant, often experience flashbacks and nightmares of traumatic events. Father Justin Atit, a consultant with Justice and Peace, facilitated the workshop. He says soldiers, whether they fought for the army or the rebels, especially need this kind of help.
If we talk about military reform, I think this is part of it. Because after, if somebody knows how to solve conflict among themselves in their place of work, and if they can know how they can overcome some of the traumatic experience that they have, the wounds that they have, if they can accept each other as one, people who are ready with the same cause to defend this country, I'm sure it will be good. So I suggest that these three topics are very important: trauma healing, conflict management, and peace building. This is, you know, it sounds simple, but this is a vast and a lot of work that need to go in.
Father Atit hopes this effort will have a gradual but lasting impact that will help soldiers be professional and respect the human rights of all civilians.
This country has been divided. Everybody is being divided. Now, if there is going to be reintegration and these people are going to together, there is a need for a principle of conflict management and above all healing as a part of forgiveness, you know, because forgiveness normally brings healing. And forgiveness will not be able to have a strong ground if at all within ourselves we have a lot of wounds, and that is trauma itself. And so you can see the way all the topics are so much interwoven together, so that we can be able to help this group of the military, so that they, in a way, they will accept themselves.
Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, founder of the Trauma Center in Brooklyn, Massachusetts, and professor of psychiatry at Boston University School of Medicine, describes how terror and emotional isolation reshape both brain and body in his book, The Body Keeps the Score. Van der Kolk says new development in neuroscience explain why traumatized people experience incomprehensible anxiety, inexplicable numbing, and intolerable rage. Lieutenant Jacob Manor, one of the participants, says missing his family members and close friends killed during the war is his recurring nightmare.
We face a lot of trauma. You can be separated with your family, then you remain lonely somewhere. You think back about your family, you think back about your children, you think back about the issues related to your social well-being, you think back about your friend, then you become lonely. Sometimes you become traumatic. Then you, or even you are thinking back in the way that you are going to get your loved ones. So this is one of the trauma in the military.
The Justice and Peace group say it is training a number of army counselors so that they can help their colleagues overcome trauma. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
Officials in Jonglei State say crops have failed in parts of the state because of too much rain and because of too little rain in other parts of Jonglei. They say the extremes of weather conditions could result in food shortages and hunger in the state. Jacob Achek has this report for VOA from Juba.
Jonglei State's Agriculture and Forestry Minister Mayene Ngora Atim says while there was no rain in part of Bor County, heavy rain in other parts prevented farmers from working their fields. He said the two extremes of weather are likely to lead to food shortages.
It was heavy in the north of Bor, and there were no rain in the south of Bor. So this could affect the food production of the Bor County. You know, when you see the number of farmers who have cultivated and the number of farmers whose farm has failed and the number of farmers who could not make it and the number of people who are not working on farm, you can generalize and you can say that there will be hunger.
Bor County Commissioner Mameruk says there will be little to harvest this year in part of Kolnyang, Baidit, Jale, Anyidi and Makwach. He blamed the projected crop shortages on drought conditions in the county.
So generally, the county is facing severe drought, and this is going to be a disaster to our people. So now we have failed to achieve food security to our population.
Rook said crops like maize, groundnut and simsim have failed because of the drought. 52-year-old farmer Awili Kudum says he was one of the victims of the drought in the south of Bor County.
Almost all of the crops I planted this year failed because there was no water. My maize crop dried up. Only the okra did not fail.
Abraham Ayomolwal is a part of a farming cooperative in Bor. He said he and many of the other farmers in the cooperatives also lost their crop because of the drought.
There was no rain from March to June. I planted kale and tomatoes, and these have all failed. What remains now is okra. None of us were able to prevent the crop failure, which is due to the drought.
Officials are still trying to determine the exact number of the people who may become food insecure because of the extreme of weather. Ngor says the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry plan to educate farmers in Jonglei on best practices, including how to use water from the Nile to irrigate their field, to try to avoid similar problems in the future. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Residents call for change to customary law at a forum in Kwajok. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there anything you did as a child that you did not tell your parents?
My father had gone for work. He had a radio and I got it. I switched on, it was not working. Then I assembled it and I disconnected everything. Then it was difficult for me to then arrange it.
I did not do anything. Whatever I could do, I could tell my parents.
Oh my God, I used to steal her some money in the wallet. I remember I stole 100 and I feared a lot. I thought she's going to beat me. I didn't tell her. So when I grew up, that's when I told her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Traditional laws is still applied in many parts of South Sudan. But in Warab State, some people are saying customary Dinka statutes that are still widely used to settle disputes, including some serious crimes, are outdated and need to be brought into line with modern legal system. Ayuel Santino Manut reports for VOA from the state capital, Kwajok.
The debate was fierce at yesterday's Rule of Law Forum organized by United Nations Mission in South Sudan, our enemies. Participant Agi Obao should amend traditional one LL law and how it should be done. Eventually, more than 40 participants agreed to form a committee to scrutinize the law and report back to the forum with their findings within 2 weeks. One Alel customary law is practiced only in Dinka communities. It was introduced in 1984 by the regional government of the Greater Bahr El Ghazal region, which includes today's Northern Bahr El Ghazal, Western Bahr El Ghazal, Lakes and Warab states. Since the traditional statutes were introduced, the law has been used in customary courts to settle disputes among members of Dinka community and even to compensate victims victims of serious crimes. Just last week, Wanale law was used in Warabu State to compensate the families of 78 people who have been killed in a five-month-old conflict over fishing rights. A special court made up of traditional and state judges and two attorneys ordered that the families of each victim should receive 31 cows for each life lost as called for under Wanale law. Isaac Lafia is an UN's human rights official. He says it is high time to reform the traditional laws. Lafia says that these days traditional courts are applying customary remedies when they adjudicate serious crimes.
They are trying murder cases, they are trying rape cases, and also compensations that have been paid for very serious violations like killings, wounding, and the law is telling us that when I bust your eye, I pay one cow. I mean, these are things that will not work in the new Sudan.
25-year-old Jennifer Awood says some customary laws are outdated, especially the sections about the rights of women and girls.
When a girl is seen a menstruation period at the age of 12 years, the customary law says the girl is ready to be married, which is a child abuse. And if a girl is married at the age of 12 or 13, the girl may not be able to produce the baby healthy or she might die in the delivery.
South Sudan's traditional constitution considered anyone under the age of 18 to be a child. The constitution also contains a clause on the rights of people of marriageable age, but does not specify at what age someone is considered old enough to marry. Nyanut Madud Malwek is the director of gender in Warabu State's Ministry of Social Development. She says Wanale law provides no remedies for violence deaths of women and children because back when traditional law was adopted, killing women and children was unheard of. Sadly, today that has changed, Malwek says. She says traditional laws have to be amended if they are to remain relevant.
Back in the days when Wanale law was created, if a man was struck with a spear, a woman could save his life by lying on top of him. But these days, if a man is shot and a woman tries to protect the man, all of them would be shot dead. This is a new phenomenon that was not there when Wanale law was enacted.
Warabu State Advisor for Gender Adior Kwal Amom told the forum that changing traditional laws in Warabu State would be just a first step towards reshaping the country's legal system. Kwal said other states also need to bring traditional laws into line with modern statutes. A report by the Norwegian Refugee Council says South Sudan has been moving away from customary laws and courts since the end of the Sudanese civil war in 2005. But the same report also found that traditional courts are perceived by South Sudanese as being more transparent, accountable, fair, and trustworthy than modern courts. For BOA News, I'm Ayuel Santino Manut in Kwajok.
The United Nations Children's Fund is calling for urgent action by the European Union to fully protect children fleeing conflict in Syria and other war-torn countries. UNICEF says refugee children are particularly vulnerable and open to abuse and exploitation. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund finds children make up one quarter of all asylum seekers in Europe so far this year. In the first 6 months of 2015, it reports 106,000 children sought asylum in the European Union, most from war-torn Syria, followed by Iraq and Afghanistan. Peter Salama, UNICEF's regional director for the Middle East and North Africa, says that after 5 years of conflict in Syria, the war is coming to European shores. Speaking on a telephone from New York, he says it is important to remember why Syrians are fleeing their homeland.
Especially for the children, it's
becoming a living hell. We know that millions of people are now living under siege. Water is being deliberately cut off to population centers. Education and health facilities and their personnel are regularly being targeted.
Salama says children are being killed and maimed by aerial bombardment. He says boys as young as 8 are being forcibly recruited as combat soldiers. Girls are being used as sexual slaves or forced into early marriages. He says Syria is moving toward becoming a failed state, and the country's children risk becoming a lost generation. Given this context, he says it is hardly surprising that people are fleeing to salvage a future for themselves and for their families. Salama says it is critical that European countries provide health care and protection services for the refugees. He says their asylum policies must take children's best interests into account.
As well as that, we need to ensure that all along the journey, from the points of origin through the transit countries, and finally to the destination countries, children are protected from exploitation and abuse. We're particularly concerned, for example, about Libya, another crisis-affected country which is an important staging post for trafficking and refugee migration through to Europe.
In the meantime, the UN Refugee Agency welcomes a European Union plan to relocate 160,000 refugees from Greece, Italy, and Hungary to other countries in Europe. But the UNHCR says for the plan to work, reception centers that can quickly register incoming refugees must be set up in the 3 countries of first asylum. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The head of a vocational training center in Ye is looking for financial backers to allow him to expand the school. Ayume Eli says he needs more funds if the center is to continue to help young people with few resources to acquire the skill they need to get a job with the future. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington.
Eli is the principal of the Yei Vocational Training Center, or YVTC, which has provided free training to nearly 2,000 young people since it opened its door in 1997. The center caters to youths from all 10 states of South Sudan who could not afford to stay in school. The YVTC offers courses in construction skills, such as carpentry and joinery, bricklaying, and in other fields in which demand for employees is high, including business and technology. It also trains youth on social issues such as gender-based violence and HIV awareness. The center has big plans to add even more courses, but at the moment, it is lacking the funds to put those plans into action, Eli says.
We have proposed to have writing and mechanics, plumbing, metal works and metal fabrication, catering and hospitality, including hairdressing. But all in all, we are waiting to see if we could get enough funds.
Students come to the center from around South Sudan. They board at the school while they complete their training. Most of the students get jobs immediately after they leave the school. Denia Dennis Jones studied bricklaying and construction at the center. When he completed his studies at the YVTC, he made a living building schools in Bor and Terkeka counties in Jonglei and Central Equatoria states. He made such a good living doing that he was able to pay for university studies and get a bachelor's degree.
After joining the center and I graduated, I even became independent in my own family. I got married. I was to sustain the family. The center has done a lot to me. And the kind of money I earn has doubled, or in fact tripled, the money I used to get.
Today, Dennis is an instructor at the YVTC. Mark Alfred enrolled at the center after lack of funds forced him to drop out of school. He is studying carpentry and has big ambitions for the future.
After finishing the college, then I will be given some tools, and then I will try to do some business with that school. So I'm making the furnitures and selling them away. So if I get money, then I go back to school.
YVTC is supported by the Norwegian People's Aid NGO. Eli says the center is funded to the tune of $180,000, but needs more than twice that amount to be able to expand its courses offering and add more boarding facilities for new students. Eli says Expanding the center will help more South Sudanese to stand on their own feet and have a bright future. He says the center is not just helping individuals to improve their lives, but is also giving them the skills they need to develop the country. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is the recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. At a meeting in Juba today, South Sudanese civil society activists discussed how they could work with government and rebel officials on implementing the recently signed peace agreement. Activists from 17 different organizations took part in today's forum. Facilitator Marika Jet Lorna says they want to start building consensus among civil society representatives, as well as faith-based youth and women's groups, to have a say in how the deal is carried out. Lorna says it's important for the alliance to continue asserting itself as a partner in the peace process and not sit back and then later blame others. Benny Gideon, who represents the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, says activists must develop and engage in mechanisms and strategize on implementing and monitoring the agreement. Extreme weather conditions could lead to food shortages and hunger in Jonglei State. Officials say crops in parts of the state have failed because of too much rain, and elsewhere the problem is not enough rain. They say far fewer crops will be harvested this year. Jonglei State Agriculture and Forestry Minister Maya Ngor Adam says while there was no rain in parts of Bor County, heavy rains in other parts stopped farmers from working their fields, and the two extremes of weather will likely lead to many food shortages. Bor County Commissioner Mama Rook says there will be little to harvest this year in several areas. And finally, in western Bahar al-Ghazal State, military personnel are being trained by the group Justice and Peace. That's a Roman Catholic organization that works on conflict resolution, trauma management, and reconciliation. Organizers say the training will reduce the fear associated with war. For the past 3 days, about 40 military commanders and privates have been receiving conflict management training provided by that commission. With the signing of the peace deal, most South Sudanese believe the conflict is over, but tens of thousands are still traumatized by the violence they've witnessed. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Cease Fire by Kebas featuring Young Bo. Hey.
We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep.
Zeta Duban, Junu Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakisi Yasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kulana Kan Machine, Leki Dam, Shuf Shabab Bimud, Iyal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Ofof Kaman, Kuli Yama Halbika, Mama Bikore, we want peace. Not solved. All I see is children dying. No orphans every day. I see the mothers crying. Lay a drama. Zaman kanja kila na bin belet na binia. Mia filmia bada mendin fadia lakin gibu katia. Zaman to will mater go funia.
We have been listening to Kebas featuring Young Bo with the song Cease Fire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a peaceful weekend, and we hope you join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The fish is so bright, I need some sun or shade.